Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy podcast from Destinations International, the trade association representing destination organizations around the globe, brought to you exclusively by Relic Agency as part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andreas Weisenborn, and welcome you for checking out our podcast. For each episode, we want to tell the story of both usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and the key advocacy moments for them. These stories are meant to tell the tale in full, covering many of our strategic issues and opportunities our sector faces, whether it be community alignment, destination stewardship, resilience, or actions based on values. We hope you listen in and learn from your peers. With that, let's get to the show. Hello, and welcome back. This is Andreas Weisenborn of Destinations International, and welcome you back to 2022 and our first episode of the Architects of Destination Advocacy. Before we get started on our first guest, a lot has happened. I hope many of you joined us the other day on our annual town hall. But for those who missed it, let me break down where we'll be this upcoming year for 2022. The first event upcoming for us is going to be our Convention Sales and Services Summit happening in person. Happy to announce for all these events, March 23rd, 2022 at National Harbor, my home state, the great state of Maryland, the United States, followed by shortly after that, also our CEO Summit. And also in person, April 3rd through the 5th, 2022, in the very beautiful and warm that we are right now, Palm Springs, California. Followed up again further on the West Coast with our Marketing and Communications Summit. Again, in person, beginning April 24th through the 26th in Seattle, Washington. And then, of course, the big one, the grand show, our annual convention in Toronto, Canada this year, July 19th through the 21st in person. Followed by, again, maybe a little bit partial, my favorite, Advocacy Summit, happening in Bloomington, Minnesota, Mall of America, October 26th through 28th. I encourage you, for yourself, for your staff, or others, if you're interested in our events, please go to check out our website at destinationsinternational.org to check out all our events and upcoming activations that we hope to catch you there. So let's go on to our first guest. So for today, we're talking Down Under, and I'm excited, our first international guest of the Architects of Destination Advocacy, Andrew Hebel, CEO at the Association of Australia Conventions Visitors Bureau, which brings together 18 influential city and regional bureaus dedicated to marketing their specific region as the premier business events destinations to both domestic and international markets, and the responsibility to promote Australia as a whole. In addition to his role as CEO there, he also serves on the Business Events Council of Australia, the peak industry body providing a single voice for the business events sector and the liaison between the federal government and all relevant agencies of the visitor economy. In addition to a full suite and resume of experiences across the business events sector in Australia, he frankly is just a good mate to know. Andrew, welcome to the show.
G'day, Andreas. I guess that's the obligatory welcome that we have to say here in Australia.
Absolutely. Again, happy 22, and I'm so happy to have you on the show. I thought it'd be a great way to kick things off is that you and I and our associations have had a wonderful and really cohesive relationship the past couple years. I kind of thought it'd be kind of worth to point out a lot of the ways we've already collaborated with the first. Many of us have been part of the 10-year anniversary of the event Impact Calculator. We sell the tool exclusively through you all with the Event Impact Calculator. I wanted to just ask you just briefly, just kind of your thoughts on the Event Impact Calculator, because you are instrumental in bringing that over to your great country.
Yeah, sure. Look, I guess the actual foundation of the Association of Australian Convention Bureau back 36 odd years ago was around really understanding the economic impact of business events and being able to articulate that back to the various states and territories, and also have an understanding of the importance of destination marketing in the business event space, and understand, you know, the budgets, the return on investment, the bidding activity, in terms of being able to establish clear goals around long-term funding for those organizations. And you know, fast forward 36 years on, economic impact, event impact is still key to the, you know, focus of the Association of Australian Convention Bureau, and partnering with Destinations International on the Event Impact Calculator was a natural progression. And we have several of our members that are subscribers and actively using the calculator tool. So it'll be interesting to see the future of that rollout here in Australia and potentially the region.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I declared on our EIC 10-year anniversary podcast, I asked all the guests, which was your favorite flavor of module? And I did proclaim the Australian was, because I think something that makes you all very unique is how you use and see the tool much differently than us domestically. You know, so much of us here have to fight for our funding and proof and worth of our events and the business we do. But those kind of aspects and values are so entrenched in CVBs across Australia. Like that argument's already won. So this is a very unique voice to articulate, you know, hey, what we bring to the community through EIC.
And I think a big difference to point out too is that we don't have in Australia any bed taxes or taxes directly attributable to the visitor economy. So it is really important to have that relationship and understanding with our, you know, government jurisdictions around the importance and value. So that's a key point that, you know, even in terms of the bidding process, the concept of being able to identify the value and a return on investment during that bidding process, let alone the event deliverable once it's actually occurred, is really critical.
Yeah, absolutely. But our relationship did stop there. You quickly realized sort of about the aspects of the community shared value and the common goods for the greater good. You realized how that could be applicable to Australia and translate to that audience. And I won't spoil it for everyone. We did release our tourism lexicon for the Australian market. I do want to call out a couple of key things about it and give especially credit to you and your organization. Was one of the words that we saw predominantly on there was the word association of vaccination in relation to visiting and travel and whatnot. In particular, you know, you all had a very famous and still prominent hashtag of give BE a shot or give business events a shot. That is such a unique thing to your country that we found out, especially in the United States, you would not see people put that out there saying you need to get vaccinated to give business events a shot. And then yet we see you and so many of your colleagues and other proudly proclaiming that. It was such a unique, again, the lexicon is all about values in a lot of ways. And it's such a unique to see the Australian values come through in the lexicon as it relates to tourism and common goods and primaries in your sector.
And look, to be honest, I think we all identified at the start of the pandemic that the only way out of this was through vaccination. I mean, typically, Australia has a high rate of vaccination in school-aged children and those types of things. But I can proudly announce today that nationwide, we're 94% double vaccinated as of today. And out of our eight states and territories, seven of those are actually over the 90% double vaccination threshold. And I think we've just achieved about 9.5 million booster shots as well. So we fully recognise that vaccination was our pathway out, being able to open and get back to normality. And I guess there was a bit of two-pronged messaging in the Give BE a Shot. First of all, yes, absolutely, vaccination is our pathway out. But secondly, in terms of governments thinking about restrictions placed on the industry, we needed to pass on that message that they need to understand the complexities of the industry and what those restrictions actually do. So by giving business events a shot, it wasn't just about vaccination. It was about policy thinking and restrictions placed on the industry to give us a chance to survive and then recover when we had the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. And I highly recommend everyone, if you get a chance, pull over in your car, do a quick Google of hashtag give BE a shot, because it's really a very unique thing to see all the Australian meeting planners and people just in the events industry showcasing their pride and everything you just talked about. So one other aspect, again, I've always enjoyed you, is you have a little bit of flair for the fun. At the start of the pandemic, you decided not to shave for quite a bit. Now, I frequently not shave because I'm just really just lazy. You actually had a really genuine altruistic purpose for it. I just wanted you, the audience, to hear what you did during the start of the pandemic and your non-shaving endeavor.
It basically started when I was attending a Tourism Australia one-day conference in Adelaide, and flying back was on the same day that the federal government had their very first what was called National Cabinet meeting, which is the Prime Minister meeting with the chief ministers and premiers of the eight states and territories. And the result of that first announcement was the stab in the heart for our sector, where gatherings basically, you know, the downward spiral of gatherings basically being recommended, you know, you don't undertake these activities. So I just recognised at that point that we were, you know, in front of us would be in a world of hurt. There would be small businesses, supply chain, really doing it tough, and mental health was going to be a huge issue in terms of overcoming what was in front of us, not knowing there'd be 2 years and still going, but at least the next 12 months. And so the idea was to raise funds for mental health through Beyond Blue, a local charity here. And I had two out clauses. One was when all restrictions were lifted, and we're still not in that stage. So as I mentioned to you on many occasions, I would have looked like Forrest Gump today had had I stuck with that pledge. But the other out clause was reaching a target of, I think, $5,000. And successfully, I got to about $6,500, which allowed me to eventually do the public shave in front of everyone. So it was a good cause, and probably wouldn't go through that again.
Just a quick shout out to all those who grow beards, that there's the ability to raise it for money for good causes, not just for a dirty look. So I do want to commend you on it. But you brought up a good point, a good sort of transition. I think it is worth pointing out where we are in 2022. Could you talk a little about where Australia is right now as it relates to where we are in the pandemic and openings, closings, you know, guidelines and so on and so forth?
Yeah, sure. Look, I guess the most, well, across the past 2 years, the biggest challenge has been that while we've had national directive, once those big national announcements are made from the federal government in partnership with the states and territories, there's been this trend of going back to their own jurisdictions and slightly tweaking those. So we've had an issue of for our industry, the real sort of inability to have a nationally consistent understanding of the restrictions in place. And we certainly understood that when there were outbreaks that there would need to be a localized response, but we kind of hoped for a little bit more consistency across the country. As of this past week, the Australian government just announced the reopening of our borders to fully vaccinated visitors. So that's two jabs. Doesn't have to include the booster, as far as I'm aware of as of today, but that's existing visa holders and newly approved visa holders as well. So this is really the opportunity for Australia to open up and welcome the world back to our country.
Wonderful. Yeah, and we're absolutely looking forward to it. I said, I've seen the news as part of it. And again, I guess once say congrats, and also would have been interesting to see what your beard looked like if you did wait this long for that clause. But I think all of us are happier sooner than later than it has occurred. That is kind of a good, I guess, jumping point to the meat of the conversation was, you know, in addition to your role as CEO AACB, you earned a long service as, you know, part of the Council of the Business Events for Australia. And what I've seen from both your sharing and the news is the recent sort of announcement media spin around Thrive 2030. I don't want to take the thunder. Would you, at the very top level, what is Thrive 2030?
Well, Thrive stands for, and this is the funny thing with government strategies, there's probably more effort in the title than there is in the strategy, but it stands for the Reimagined Visitor Economy. And it's the next long-term strategy for tourism or the visitor economy through to 2030. And I guess we already had a plan in place for the previous decade to 2020, which was called Tourism 2020, quite a well-recognized globally strategy for tourism here in Australia. And that strategy was a very simple one. It was doubling overnight expenditure. And as of 2009, I think that was in the vicinity of around about $70 billion to Australia. And we had a high and low sort of level target for the 2020 target, which was a minimum of $115 billion. And successfully, we smashed that by 2019, the end of 2019. And this is the next iteration of that exercise, which, as I said, we had a few false starts with this, because you'd recall 2 years ago to sort of this period, we had the big bushfires that got, you know, global recognition. And that would have been the year that we would have been announcing the 2030 strategy. But it was also then immediately disrupted by the global pandemic. So in essence, the work that government is undertaking in collaboration with industry is to really identify what do we want tourism to be, what do we want it to look like, and what's our long-term target into the future.
So let me say this. I mean, you've been part of this for a long time. You just mentioned the 2020 iteration. Pandemic and bushfires aside, what do you think makes this so different at this moment of time in regards to the visitor economy in Australia?
Look, I'll probably start by saying I won't push those things aside. The reason being is because the biggest debate, I guess, at this point in time is, you know, is it worth having a long-term strategy when we're basically starting from ground zero?
Good point.
Should we be focusing at a shorter period around recovery? So the great thing that Thrive actually identifies is three kind of recovery periods, and they're identified as recovery, consolidation, and acceleration. And that's a breakdown of the period between now and 2030. So we looked to achieve by end of 2024 a return to pre-pandemic levels, and then ideally set a stretch target still to 2030. Mm-hmm. I think targets are important. You can adjust them as you go through. That's the great thing about strategies, is they're supposed to be adaptable to the environment and circumstances. So I think not being too hard on ourselves around an actual target, but given that we've been through the biggest disruption that you can imagine on any industry, we do need to have something that galvanizes the sector and allows us to strive towards this ambitious goal that we set.
Now, one of the very unique things, I mean, reading through the Thrive documentation is that it really does bring together everyone of the sector and the industry in Australia for the visitor economy. It very much is kind of like the Avengers of the Australian visitor economy. I do want to ask, what is that process like, you know, just to see a national strategy come together across so many different entities and parties who come up with seemingly with a very succinct and magnificent goal to achieve 2030. What is that process like? You know, because you've been through this, you know, a couple of times. I'm just curious, for us who've never been through it, what is that like?
Well, look, I have to be quite honest in that the Tourism 2020 target probably didn't have that much upfront industry consultation. I think it was really a point of leadership by those in charge of the industry at the time, led by Tourism Australia and the minister at the time, Martin Ferguson, to set an ambitious goal, recognising that we needed something to aspire and drive us into a point of leadership. This time around, having gone through the first 10-year exercise, there was heavy consultation. And as I said, we have been disrupted through the last 2 years, but that that consultation with industry started about, I think, in early 2019, where there was an expert panel set up at that stage, and really identifying a whole heap of areas across the visitor economy. As I said, that got paused. A new expert panel was put on to assess those 2019 discussions and strategic objectives and take that back to market again. But as I said, look, it's been very, very challenging for industry and their participation to really look beyond the next 2 years as a result of the pandemic.
I mean, what a unique aspect of this in describing the amount of unified components to this. But for someone who is not in the tourism sector or the visitor economy as it relates to Australia, what would you want the average, you know, resident or citizen or community to feel if they would read this or understand this as it relates to their country?
That's a really great question. And that's something that, particularly from a business events perspective, we really struggle with is that community engagement. And I think, again, if you go back to 2019, I think there were sentiments around the world, you know, terms such as over-tourism were being sort of brought into play, the fear of the impact of jumping on a plane, those sorts of things. So we had some significant challenges, and sustainability certainly won't go away moving forward. But that direct connection to the community, and I know through our conversations, and particularly, you know, some webinar information that we provided to our industry last year, certainly the things that we identified was that we are in global competition for business, for talent, for innovation, for investment, those kinds of things. And we need to articulate our story a little bit better to the local community to say, hey, this is what the visitor economy brings. This is what destination organisations bring to us to make us stand out from our not just our neighbour, but our competitors across the seas. So that's something certainly that we need to achieve a little bit better. And I think the overall Thrive strategy needs to have, this is probably one of my biggest criticisms that I put in our feedback. There needs to be something in there about our why. What is our purpose? What do we bring over and above jobs and visitor spend? And that's where, in my view, Thrive kind of falls a little bit short, in that the focus is purely on the immediate economics and not so much the broader long-term benefits of business events and the visitor economy to local communities.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so unique about your connection to the community shared values, that you understand that there's the benefit of the brand, the experience goes far beyond just, you know, business and events. It actually talks very much of experience, building quality of place, which just quality of life. And you're right, we're all competing right now. Like, we're all competing at the world stage for attention of not just brand and visitors, but you mentioned talent acquisition, you know, getting young families and jobs to your area. I guess one thing I've always sort of reading through the document and Thrive and really admiring so much about this effort is, again, it comes out of jealousy, is Australians' fundamental belief and values towards seeing the government as an element of collaboration for the tourism and the events leader, that you all subsequently see the government as a means to help provide a solution. And I always am envious of that because, you know, here in the United States, we don't fundamentally, you know, our highest form of government representation, you know, comes through the Commerce Department. So they're making decisions on steel tariffs and so on and so forth, and along with tourism. But you all see government as largely a solution and help with tourism. I'm just sort of curious, as an Australian, why is that? And what can we learn from that, or, you know, gain from that?
That's a really great question. Look, I think first and foremost, I would say that we're an industry that doesn't expect handouts or doesn't seek handouts. So while we've gone through a very difficult period and we've relied on that for businesses to survive, whether that's through wage subsidy or other mechanisms, business support, removal of certain taxes, payroll, those sorts of things, we're not an industry that expects handouts and grants and money from the government. But I think what we do value from government is first of all, recognition of the importance. So again, you know, being regarded as a significant industry, but in order for us to thrive and flourish, I guess we rely on the leadership of government to set the framework for a conducive environment that allows business to do what it needs to do and be able to attract, you know, the right people to the country to give us the best bang for buck. So I think it's around, you know, again, I'll just repeat, you know, getting that understanding that we're a significant industry. I mean, look, just before the pandemic hit, I think we're a $40 billion export sector, which was the fourth largest export in the country ahead of beef, petroleum and wool. However, if you look at Australia's traditional industries, the primary industries that we've been recognised for, you know, agriculture, mining, so things you can grow, things you can pull out of the ground, we've been built on those industries. And so it's very natural that when there's drought, fire, flood, cyclone, that there's immediate support for the industry, those industries that are impacted. But, you know, even going through such an incredibly difficult pandemic, tourism has still struggled, I think, to get that acknowledgement of government, even though, as you're saying, we probably have a great relationship with government, but it's still not a natural one as per some of our other, I won't say colleague, I actually say competitor industries.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even thought about that. I do want to call, I think it's wonderful that you said one of the highest exports is wool. That's the first time wool has been mentioned on the podcast. So I want to call note of that. I think one thing is very unique though, and just really the values of Australians is that you all take holidays and travel very seriously as individuals. You know, it is something you all highly regard, respect. You know, I've met on many of my travels, you know, the Australians who are out on holiday. I'm not going to try to do an Australian accent, but I think there's something very much intrinsically of values of how you as a people in a nations want to experience your leisure and the idea that travel is beyond just economic influence, but societal, cultural, spiritual, you know, for you all. And I think that's something very unique to you all and how you see it. And you can kind of see that influence a little bit into Thrive, that, you know, you all understand this is really part of the human condition of being an Australian.
I had to say it, but Andreas, a lot of us have passports here. we look at ourselves as citizens of the world, and we want to take over, but through friendship rather than anything aggressive. Look, you know, we have what I would call quite a, you know, a great system. We have as standard 4 weeks of annual leave that we can take vacation or holiday. And many people, while we've got a great backyard, we love exploring the world. And I think that is fundamentally connected to our multiculturalism, you know, and our connections both here locally, but also across the globe. So I think as an individual, people love to travel, but then there is, I'll come back to it, there is still a little bit of a disconnect between me as a traveler and necessarily travelers coming here and recognizing that benefit to my local community. I mean, typically, and that's why I think there's always a bit of a lag in terms of policy and investment in the sector from a government elected officials perspective. The reason being is that, you know, tourism, inward tourism or inbound tourism, and business events are seen as activities that benefit outsiders. And we need to better establish that that communication around how those benefits, you know, transfer through to the local community.
Yeah, and I think that's, you see a lot of that, some of those manifestations come through with the Thrive 2030 document. Since you've kind of mentioned that, you know, even though this says Thrive 2030, you know that they're going to have to be, you know, milestones and stuff along the way. That, you know, seeing it as just a static 10-year strategic envisionment is kind of a fool's end. You know, pandemics and whatever else might be thrown at us. I was just curious to you, what do you see as key milestones along the way to 2030 to saying, okay, Thrive is hitting what it's supposed to intend to hit?
Yeah, well, again, as I said, it's broken down into those three areas. The first milestone is simply getting to pre-pandemic levels, which, again, is estimated to, you know, bring in $170 billion by the end of 2024. So that's a really key milestone. Once we get to that, there's a more extended, I guess, opportunity to consolidate over the following 2 or 3 years. You know, maintain solid growth over and above our pre-pandemic levels. You know, investing in new products, new experiences, and then the acceleration phase is where we then take off in the last couple of years. So hopefully that middle section has, you know, brought together the right ingredients of policy, investment, again, business settings to allow the industry to take off at the end of the decade.
That's wonderful. I mean, that's a kind of good send off, kind of one of the final questions I wanted to ask you. You know, if we could time travel and we get to 2030, and I'm asking you a very similar question, how would you determine if Thrive 2030 was a success? Outside of the key markers you indicate, but, you know, you as much experience as you have, both as AACB and also as, you know, on the council, what do you see? Is like, okay, we hit it. We hit a home run with 2030 with Thrive.
Well, I really hope that this happens before 2030, but my key win is that, look, Thrive is a whole of industry strategy. My view of, you know, the plan for the next decade is it requires an offset whole of government strategy. The strategy needs to have in place reason, not just for the Minister for Trade, Tourism and Investment to have an interest in tourism and the visitor economy. It needs to have the broader sweep of portfolios across government invested and interested. And what I mean by that is, for example, you know, in our Department of Home Affairs, I'm not sure how that translates to the US, but where visa settings, fees, requirements are established, you know, we would hope that when decisions are made outside of the immediate portfolio or department of tourism, that they consider the impact of decisions made on the visitor economy. They understand the importance of investment. So when ideas from the industry are put up to government and, you know, you've got your select few politicians sitting around a room deciding on the budget of the forward estimates, that they recognise that the return on investment in this sector is critical. So, you know, I keep saying, you know, there's a role for tourism in the visitor economy, business events in our foreign affairs portfolio. We recognize that the trade of knowledge and people and you know, visitation occurs between the strongest of allies. And it needs to be recognized that there's an important cultural exchange component within the visitor economy that is undertaken through people traveling and moving across borders. So there has to be a whole of government understanding. We need the tourism minister to be flanked by all senior ministers and recognised in that department, public sector level underneath also. So for me, that would be my goal outcome. And look, being a little bit biased from a business events perspective,
it's government recognizing that business events are a platform to achieve their own agenda. Mm-hmm. You look, I'm just down the road from our Parliament House here in Canberra, in Ngunnawal country, and the meeting that politicians have here in Parliament, it's the longest standing meeting that this country hosts. And they come together in Canberra and they do that to debate and argue policy, where they should spend money, new innovations, new ideas to benefit society. And business events are mini versions of that. But, the ideals of those are to grow industries. They're not about shrinking industries. They're about growing industries and making them flourish. And you know, those platforms also allow the Australian government to achieve its agenda. So, for example, we currently have a global talent program here where we want to steal the world's brightest and best and bring them here. And I know those similar schemes happen everywhere. But we work very closely with the Department of Home Affairs that looks after that program by highlighting what are the upcoming international business events that we're hosting, where they'll be hosted, what the date will be. That gives them forward vision as to what should we be doing at that event. Since we're going to have the world's brightest and best in, whether it's health, professional and scientific services, those kinds of industry areas, should we be promoting Australia as a great place to live, work and invest at those activities? And we have forward insight to understand where and when they'll be occurring. So it's that, it's that partnership between industry and providing knowledge to government, and then government actually leveraging those activities when they're being held or even in advance. Because once the event's been and gone and everyone's traveled back home again, it's too late, we've missed the opportunity. So it's really about that perfect blend or definition of partnership, where government helps us attract these activities, but likewise they gain significant benefit in making sure that those activities that ideally align with their priority trade investment or other targets that they may have, be able to leverage and provide a win-win for Australia at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I do just comment, part of my research on the Lexicon Australia was getting to see some of those recorded Parliament events. So highly recommend to everyone a quick Google or YouTube to see those. They are a sight to be seen and just fun. I don't know how to describe it otherwise than that. Just something fun, especially as an American who watches our level of government discord, to see some of that. It's actually, how you phrase it, I think is much better, but it's just something fun. But I did want to comment, I hope in 8 years, hopefully over a beer, hopefully not separated an ocean, we can sit down and say, okay, we achieved all that and Thrive 2030. If folks wanted to find out more about your work, AACB, or also the council or Thrive, where can they find you, Andrew?
Yeah, sure. So my day job, the Association of Australian Convention Bureau, website is aacb.org.au. And the Business Events Council, as you said, the one voice for the many business events associations in Australia, is businesseventscouncil.org.au. So that's the platform where we all come together and try to articulate not just to government, but back to industry with one voice for clear messaging.
Wonderful. Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show, and happy 22, my friend.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
Thank you again for joining myself, Andreas Weisenborn, and Andrew Hebel of this month's episode of The Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service to always catch the latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org, or check out content throughout the advocacy section at our website or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.